As many of you know that May 31st, I participated in my first half Ironman length triathlon. It was the Black Bear Triathlon. It consists of a 1.2-mile swim, a 56-mile bike, and a 13.1-mile run for a total of 70.3 miles. That distance was really daunting for me. And when I was preparing for the race and I began to read what other people who had run the race in previous years had written, I had begun to wonder if I had taken the stupid pills when I registered for this race. The race was, after all, in the Poconos in northeast Pennsylvania in May. So the swim would be cold and the bike would be hilly. The run, everyone said, was fairly flat. At least that put my mind at ease. But then one guy wrote that the bike involved over 6,600 feet of climbing. That's a sobering number. I fretted and I feared. I even took, one day, a special training ride around here and up in the Greene County. And I went about 45 miles, but the best I could manage according to my numbers was only 2,500 feet of climbing. I was really concerned. So Mary Lynn will tell you that the week before the race, I was not sleeping well. I would wake in the middle of the night, and all I could think about were the hills. I would lie there in the darkness and allow the worst of my imagination to show me hills that rivaled the Alps and the Tour de France. And if I wasn't awake, my dreams showed my anxiety. I once dreamt that I came out of the water and had after the swim and had absolutely nothing ready for the bike leg. I ran all over creation trying to get what I needed, while all along the clock continued to run. But when we arrived up there, the day before the race, we drove the bike leg of the course. And my mind was actually put at ease to some extent. I found that while the bike course was hilly, I live in West Virginia. None of the hills were like anything that I had ridden on here. So I felt a little better. Nonetheless, the night before the race, my sleep was no better. I was awake before the alarm went off at 5:15. I ate a bagel with peanut butter and choked down the hotel's in-room coffee. Oh. And I reflected on the task at hand. Simply put, I was terrified. I continued to fight back the butterflies in my stomach. 70.3 miles. Are you kidding me? What made me think I could do this? Maybe we would get there on time. Maybe something would go wrong and I wouldn't be allowed to race. Countless scenarios went through my head. And again, my imagination got the worst of me. I had prayed and I had reflected. And I grabbed on to a text message from Tony. Tony's a guy I've never met in person. He's a friend of mine on a triathlon website that we both belong to. And he had texted me the day before with various encouragements. But right then, on that morning of the race, one stuck with me. Trust your trainer. Easier said than done, of course, since I had lost the entire month of February to pneumonia and Jeremiah's illness and hospital stays. But he was right. A race isn't defined solely by the day's performance. There are, of course, conditions on the course that can affect one's race. One man's bike suffered severe mechanical difficulties, and the race director ultimately pulled his timing chip, removing him from the race. He wasn't going to finish in time. Stomach pain that I had been struggling with made its first appearance during this race to upset my nutrition schedule. Made it tough for me. But for the most part, the race is determined by the minutes, the hours, the days, and the weeks of training that have gone on long before the start signal goes off. Every athlete out on the course, whether they are looking to reach the podium, to do better than last time, or merely hang on and survive and finish like I was, had to trust that their training had been sufficient. It all came down to trust. That trust got me through the frenzied rush of preparing my transition area where I would switch between the three sports. And it finally got me to the starting line, into the cold lake, which was taking my breath away. Focused on acclimating myself to the water temperature, loosening up and swimming a bit. Ate a banana, and before I knew it, my wave was called. And I could trust that training. Because when I hit the water and swam out to the starting line, my body took over. The training took over. Face in the water, arm stroking, body rotating rhythmically. All that was left was to trust the training. When it comes down to it, though, that's really what we all do. Maybe we don't think about it like that, but we trust in the training that we all have. Doctors and nurses don't look up how to do every procedure every time someone walks into the emergency department. They trust their training. Soldiers, police officers have no alternative when things get hot but to trust their training. Whether they realize it or not, parents find themselves simply parents are trained, mainly through their families of origin. How many of us simply find ourselves reacting and responding to the ways that our parents did? The phrases that our parents use pop out of our mouths, sometimes unwelcome. But it's because we have been trained, for good or for bad. We trust the ways that we have been trained and formed to carry us through the times when we must simply act. And I think in a way, Jesus' question to the disciples today, why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? Might reflect the same idea. The disciples, of course, are in a hot spot out on the sea. They find themselves literally, as they understand it, in the realm where chaos dwells. And chaos seems poised to overwhelm them. Wind blowing, waves swamping the boat, the disciples panic. Finally, they call for Jesus, who, in the midst of it all, is asleep in the stern on the cushion. Gets up and he rebukes the wind and the waves and turns to his disciples for his question to them. Is it a rebuke as well? Do his questions amount to nothing more than a put down? You faithless buffoons. Or are his questions more of that reminder? Trust your training. We are, after all, only a quarter of the way through the story told by Mark. The disciples have seen and heard a great deal. Jesus has taught with parables, has challenged the religious authorities, done a number of miraculous deeds, and called the disciples. But the disciples have really merely been observers thus far. It's a whole other chapter and a half before the disciples are sent out on their own to do their own stuff. But here now, when things get hot, the disciples call on Jesus. And it doesn't really seem that they know why. since after all, they only refer to him as teacher, and then stand in awe that this one commands the forces of nature. All it seems to me is that they trust Jesus to do something. That much has been made clear in their training thus far. When things get hot, call on Jesus. That they understand. That they trust. Why not, after all? Trust is at the heart of faith. To talk about faith is to talk about trust, and in particular, trust in a particular person. Our faith is not primarily the doctrines or beliefs that we hold, although what we believe is most certainly shaped by our faith. No, our faith is rooted first and foremost in trust. The reformer and colleague of Luther, Philip Melanchthon, in the Apology to the Augsburg Confession, wrote that faith is certain trust in the heart. When with my whole heart I regard the promises of God as certain and true, through which they are offered me, without my merit, the forgiveness of sins, grace, and all salvation through Christ the Mediator. Now, the disciples in that boat at that moment have yet to see or experience the full promise of what Jesus brings, since they have not yet traveled through the cross and resurrection. But there is something in him and about him that they trust, so that when they find themselves in the same boat with him, he better be in charge. What of us then? How do we respond to the chaos and the hot spots around us? When we are in the boat with Jesus, do we trust our training? As much as some voices might want us to believe that the Spirit always works in us spontaneously, the deeper reality is that the Spirit is working in us constantly so that we respond to the circumstances around us, the chaos of culture and personal experiences, and not simply react to them. My wife made that really clear to me very shortly after I was ordained. I was in Missouri preaching for one of my best friend's weddings. And I was going over my sermon, standing in the pulpit the day before as other folks were around practicing in the choir and whatnot, when another friend of mine, Daryl, a Mennonite, whose tradition would not allow the pastor to prepare anything, but simply step into the pulpit and speak as the Spirit moved him. He came up and he sort of jokingly said to me, "Sounds like you're rehearsing." Mary Lynn, thankfully sitting nearby, responded with what? "Can't the Spirit work ahead of time?" She's good. Our trust and our faith and our subsequent actions is built up and trained in us. And the school for such training lies in the church, in our study, in our worship, in our mission, in our fellowship within the body of Christ. God is present, training us up. Very early in the history of the church, the boat became to be seen as an image of the church. After all, in the flood, God's chosen family, Noah and his people, are saved in a boat. In our text this morning, Jesus and his chosen, the disciples, are together in a boat. Our life in the church is not one where we are left alone, guarded from the wind and the waves, but afloat, one in which we are continually trained for our response to the time when those wind and the waves rise up. To the waters of baptism, Jesus calls us into a life that may seem daunting. But it is, after all, this Jesus who calls us. It is this Jesus who gives us our training plan so that we might meet the challenges of the world faithfully by calling on him in prayer, partaking in his body and blood, engaging in the study of the Word and sharing His love in many and various ways with others. All along, we are formed in His image, trained to be His disciples and apostles. And we may be afraid. And we may not do it great. That's the wonderful thing about this life of faith, is that it is something that is not once over and done with, but it is a life into which we enter. Forms us and trains us. And for that, let us trust our training. Thanks be to God. Amen.